This is MSO News Sports, and we are joined by Janie Winchell from the Peabody Essex Museum, the curator of bats. Just bats. And Janie, welcome. Thanks so much for taking some time to join us to tell us about this exhibition.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Bill.
I understand that this all started, several weeks ago. So we missed the opening events and the opening day on September 9th for this exhibit. But give us an overview, and then we can delve into some of the elements of bats.
Well, there's plenty of time for people to come see the exhibition. It'll be up until July 28th of 2024. So especially given how busy Salem can be in October, people who don't want to come for the Halloween activities, totally fine to wait and not feel rushed to get here. And so the show is really exploring the wondrous world of bats and our multifaceted connections with them. And so one of the things that I realized in curating this exhibition was just how many misconceptions there are about bats and how little people really know about these remarkable animals. And so they have like associations through the Halloween imagery, which often presents bats in a spooky and kind of eerie way. And that may be the only way that they've actually experienced bats is through these types of decorations that have very little to do with bats as the animals themselves. So that's one of the things we really wanted to delve into.
Yeah, and I think other familiarity with bats would be people might have them in their homes or watch a movie where they're in somebody's home, just causing a nuisance at that point, or how people see them as being a nuisance. But there's those pop culture references, also science references, and so on. And also, let me just—I'm just beginning, at one spot here where we can go all different places. But the museum itself actually has either paintings or photos or other representations of bats in other exhibits, and that is part of the exhibit as well, I understand.
Yes, we have bat representations across our museum collections, and that's really referencing how prominent bats have been in artwork around the globe and over time. So this was a special opportunity to feature objects from across museums' collections relating to a specific animal. There's works in the show that have never been out on view before, and that's a special moment for the museum and for me as the curator for the exhibit as well.
All right. Now, there are also live bats here, and the Egyptian fruit bats are one of the bats that you have, and obviously, I'd not heard of that, I don't believe. So tell me about the live bats that are a part of the exhibit.
Yes, we have a small colony of male Egyptian fruit bats that come with the exhibition, the core exhibition, was developed by Build for Impact, and they're affiliated with Indiana Wild, which is a conservation education organization that houses these fruit bats, which have been captive raised for generations, originally came from a zoo colony. And so there's an enclosure where people can get a close-up look at these animals that are, they're wild bats, but they've been living in conjunction with people now for generations. So they're really acclimated to the kinds of noises and activities that are associated with an exhibition and also with handlers. We at the museum have a core group of the bat care team, of which I'm a member. And so it's our privilege, really, to be caring for these bats and to monitor their behaviors and then offer people a chance to see bats in a different light other than in scary movies like you were just referencing, or if they have the surprising experience of a bat coming into their into their house, and that can be frightening for people. Even though the bats aren't there to be a threat to the people, they've just gotten they've come into a place that they didn't intend, and they don't know how to get out. So the chance to give people a moment to watch bats and sort of see them in a non-threatening way felt like just such an important opportunity in this show.
You said you were a member of the bat care team. So let me ask you this. As you've been around these bats, what strikes you? What do you know now that you didn't know maybe several months ago?
Well, I've never spent time around Egyptian fruit bats. I actually studied bats in graduate school, so I've been around bats and worked with rehabilitated bats before. But the Egyptian fruit bats are very curious, and they get to know us. So that's something that's been fun to experience over the last few weeks, is them clearly recognizing who we are. And when we put in enrichment into their enclosure, like just the other night, I put in some fresh basil from my garden as a thing, not that they don't eat the basil, but it's a sensory stimulation for them. And so it was cool, because even as we were putting out the food trays for them, some of them were coming first over to the basil to check it out. I'm like, hey, what is this? And so I feel like we are learning something new every day just being around them. And although when people come during the day, that's the bats' night, we need to think of bats as living opposite to us. They are primarily active at night. But even during the day, when people come through, they'll, you know, if you give a few minutes, they will be stretching, grooming, which they spend a lot of time cleaning themselves, or chittering amongst each other, because although bats, including these particular bats, are echolocating, meaning they're making noises above our hearing range primarily, they do also vocalize in the hearing range that humans can still recognize. So they'll sort of complain at each other, and so you will hear that. So it's, you know, this chance that people would rarely get to be around the bats, but also contextualized by this exhibition experience that is exploring bats from all these different facets, all the different ways that different cultures have engaged with bats or perceived bats now and historically.
Well, I want to go into the pop culture thing in just a moment, but Janie, I just can't help but think that when you go home at night, these bats are in there talking about you guys. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm sure they are, yes.
I mean, they seem pretty perceptive. But I think this is a great transition point to go into the science and the impact that bats have had on science and research. Can you share that with us?
It's amazing the kinds of discoveries that have been made about bats that has then now been transferred into innovation. There's actually a very cool bat drone called BatBot that was invented partly with a lead engineer at Northeastern University, Ali Reza Ramazani, where they've developed a flying robot that is inspired by the tremendous maneuverability of bats in flight. Bats have 40 different joints in their wings and are incredibly skilled flyers as a result. And so this production of robots that's inspired by bats is happening right here in our backyard. So that's one of them. There's an echolocating cane that was inspired by the way that bats use echolocation to create an image, a sound image of their environment. And so this is helping visually impaired individuals to navigate. It goes on and on. Medical inventions. So we've included a few of those in the show for people to get a sense of the different and incredibly varied ways that bats are influencing innovation and medical breakthroughs.
Wow, we're learning a lot here. Let's just jump to a part that's also, I understand, part of the exhibit, and that would be the pop culture that the bats, you know, have dominated over the years in different areas. We mentioned the Halloween piece and so on, or horror films or whatever, or comics. But tell me about, what does the exhibit have regarding pop culture?
Yes, we have Batman paraphernalia. We have some objects from Prince's private collection. Prince was actually a big Batman fan, in addition to generating the Batman soundtrack, which is people can still purchase that as that soundtrack has remained very popular. But we have a wrist cuff that was part of Prince's collection that he would have used in his European tour, that we realized, the reflection that's off of this wrist cuff in the shape of the bat signal would have made this amazing reflective bat signal when he was performing in a stadium, on the roof of the stadium, for example. And then we have an array of Dracula-related pop culture items, that everything from the puppet that is representative of Count Von Count from Sesame Street to a Funko Pop Count Chocula. And so there's some playful things in here for people to discover, and some of them would be quite unexpected as they were going through, but reveal the sort of interweavings of bats in society and in our daily life, like with Count Chocula. That cereal, which now only comes available in the fall, is one of those throwbacks, at least to when I was a kid, of a cereal that relates in this kind of indirect way that Dracula has been connected with bats, not by the bat's choice, I'll have you know, but by the connection of that fictional character with the species of bats in South and Central America that feed on blood to survive, but they don't feed on human blood, just to clarify that point. They're much more interested in livestock, something that's not going to be moving very quickly, that they can approach and not surprise. There's no vampire bats anywhere in North America. So the problem with some of the things like the connection with vampire bats and Dracula is then everyone thinks, all bats are vampire bats, when in actuality only three species out of 1,400 different kinds of bats feed on any kind of blood. And in that case, really only one of those is feeding on mammal blood predominantly, and the other two are feeding mostly or exclusively on birds, on blood from birds.
Well, Janie, I want to just reassure all the many visitors that are headed to Salem that because there aren't a lot of cattle in Salem at this point, that they're probably going to be okay.
Definitely going to be okay, yes. They'd have to be down in South or Central America and sleeping outside, not in a tent. So it's pretty unlikely that they'd find themselves in that circumstance unless they were doing something very extreme.
Well, that disclaimer is sponsored by Destination Salem. There we go. Yeah. All right, man. So are there any other elements of this or auxiliary pieces at the Peabody Essex Museum regarding the bats exhibit?
Well, I would just say that there are a variety of interactive and experiential moments in the show. Obviously, experiential to be encountering the live bats. But, for example, we have an interactive station where people can make their own origami bat with a folding tutorial by one of the artists in the show. And so those types of experiences, I feel, really add a dimension that people wouldn't necessarily expect before they were coming in. And that's work that Michael LaFosse contributed to the show. And he's an origami artist based right in Haverhill as part of Origami Do Studio. So another local connection that I certainly want to highlight for people, just the incredible creative energy that is part of the North Shore and that we really look to incorporate into exhibitions in the Art Nature Center, which is where the bats are featured.
All right. So let me ask you, tell our listeners how the exhibit Bats came to be, if you will. Where was the thinking and what's the process that goes into putting something like this together?
Well, I've been looking to do a bats exhibition here for quite a long time, especially since I studied bats, and I also saw that, wow, what a great location to do a show about bats, because people are coming in with all these preconceptions and misconceptions about bats. Many of us carry those around because they are commonly held notions about bats. And so when I learned of the Build for Impact exhibition, that's a traveling show, and the fact that with that show comes this small colony of bats, I felt like, when am I going to get this opportunity to present this as a show for PEM to consider? And really was so delighted by the positive response within the exhibition review team and our executive leadership to this idea, recognizing the complexity of this type of show, that everyone was like, This is an amazing opportunity. Let's proceed. So it's really been just a thoroughly exciting and memorable experience to be able to bring this to fruition here with all the team that makes up an exhibition. It is a lot of people, and in this case, even involves the Museum Cafe, because the Museum Cafe here at PEM is ordering the food for the bats. So I would call this a museum-wide effort for us to have this show.
I got to follow up. What kind of things are they ordering, for the bats?
Yeah, the bats like a fruit-based diet. We do include some vegetables, but they like the sort of sweeter vegetables, like red peppers and sweet potato and carrots. But they really thrive on a high-calorie, sugar-based diet, which is kind of counter to what our medical professionals would recommend for people. But for bats, that's what makes them tick, and they need a lot of fruit and different kinds of fruit. So we have apples and pears and bananas, mango, pineapple, grapes. They particularly love grapes, figs. So it's fun to kind of make up their fruit salad every night and make it interesting for them and varied.
Wow. You know, I'm guessing that maybe being a part of that Art and Nature Center at the museum, that this is something you're not all that unfamiliar with. But, I mean, normally you think a curator puts up an exhibit and they basically could walk away from it and then just let the people come by and see it. But this is nonstop attention that you guys are giving to this exhibit, for sure.
Yeah, and I like to say, in general, the exhibitions in the Art and Nature Center require a lot of care and feeding.
Yeah.
Because of the high level of interactivity and participatory nature of the shows, this definitely raises it to the next level because we have our bat guests who are really bat ambassadors, and we want to give them, you know, first and foremost, we want to make sure that the bats are having a great experience while they are here and doing everything that we can to have that be a positive and beneficial experience for them.
I'm having a great time talking to you here because I keep coming up with questions here. So I got to ask another one here. So have you had anybody come through the exhibit with kind of an interesting backstory about bats themselves?
Oh, everybody seems to have a bat story. Haven't you found this?
Well, we often don't talk about bats here.
No, but what's interesting is once you bring up bats, people will, it triggers for them, oh, yeah, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we'd go up to, every summer we went somewhere and there were bats flying around. And so it's interesting how it does seem to provide a trigger for people of memories that they've had or the time that a bat got caught in their house and the antics that the family members went through to get the bat out of the house. Those are always moments also for me for public education. And since this is a radio show, I'll just mention, if a bat gets in your house, this is usually something that happens in the middle of the summer when the baby bats have just learned to fly, and they end up getting into a house, as I said before, they don't know how to get out. The easiest thing that we can do is open the upper windows for them, and making sure the screens are not in place, and just give them some space so that they can find their way out. They are looking to get out of that space. Please don't bring it, you know, please don't use a tennis racket on them. That's when people get hurt, is when they try to interact with the bats, because either the person will trip over something, or if they try and pick up the bat is going to try and defend itself. And so if we don't pick up a bat, it's not going to bite us. They don't become aggressive unless we are coming in to actually physically handle them. So that's my recommendation for people if they have a circumstance where a bat gets into their living space.
Well, you prompted me now. I'm going to share my bat story with you.
See, you have a bat story too.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it before you even mentioned it, but I wasn't going to bring it up. But when we were kids, I lived near a golf course. So we would go out in the evening on the golf course, and we would probably search for golf balls during the day here and there. But you could toss them straight up in the air, and the bats would come out and circle around them or come by them and looking for them because of the radar. Right? That's what we believed anyways. But we would just, it was a surefire way to have a bat fly kind of over you and so on. They'd come out of the trees or whatever. And that's my bat story. Yeah.
Right. And they're curious. And of course, something coming up in the air might represent a food source like a moth. And so they will echolocate on it. You would not have heard them echolocating on it because that was above your hearing range, but they are honing in on that to identify, is this something I can eat, or is this a threat that I should avoid? And yes, I've heard a lot of stories of people like tossing tennis balls up in the air that the bats would then swoop by. You know, sometimes people think that the bats are coming at them, and I like to remind them that what we are is like fast food restaurants of insects for the bats. So the insects are attracted to us, and then the bats are flying down to feed on the insects. They are not coming after us. They are coming to what has been attracted to us. And so sometimes they can even fly quite close by, but then they are just gleaning insects that have gathered around us. They won't get caught in our hair. They aren't interested in going after us. Just those kind of reminders always feel important to alert people to.
Well, while I'm in the sharing mood, I'm thinking that, Janie, I think the museum ought to offer you a bat car to drive around town to promote this exhibit. You know what I'm saying? You'd be the person driving the bat car around the North Shore. I think it'd be fantastic. And maybe you're already doing it. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think I have to keep that secret.
It's out now. I mean, I'm sure there are car dealers out there that would love to put together a bat car for you guys. But yeah. All right, Janie, anything else? And this is the end here of my questioning. Anything else you want to share with us or reiterate about the exhibit, which, again, continues through July of 2024 at the Peabody Essex?
Right. Well, two quick things. Just one that I definitely want to give a shout out to our exhibition veterinarian, Alex Beckett, who's with the Cape Ann Animal Aid, director of medicine there, and has been super helpful for us overseeing the care of the bats and having worked at the Zoo New England as the associate vet for their bat colonies prior to taking on the role at Cape Ann. And then just reminding people that whether they like bats or not, it's important to understand that we need bats. They are the, you know, number one control for night flying insects. Without bats, we're talking lots more chemicals that would have to be put into place, even for agriculture, because bats are important to many different crops. There are species of bats that are primary pollinators, not in this part of the country, but in the Southwest, they pollinate cactus, over 500 different species of plants, including agriculturally important plants, are pollinated by bats, or their seeds are dispersed by bats. So it's, you know, just so many fascinating ways that bats are integral to our well-being and the planet's well-being. So lots of reasons to love bats.
Well, there you go. Janie, thanks so much. It's been great stuff. So thanks for sharing all of this with us and your time today for telling us about the exhibit Bats at the Peabody Essex Museum. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Janie Winchell with us, the curator of that exhibit at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem.